Only thing bumming me out is the fact I have to live in a world without Captain America.
Oh. That reminds me.
Hello, this is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's discussion is about the final episode from Season 1 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, streaming now on Disney+. This podcast contains spoilers for the show, but potentially any films or content that Marvel Studios released by the time the episode aired on April 23rd, 2021. If you're worried this discussion could alter your enjoyment of a Marvel movie, show, or comic book you haven't experienced yet, then save this podcast for later. You have been warned.
Sam Wilson.
Steve Rogers.
I kind of put that together.
It's good to meet you, Sam.
Want to be part of the podcast and have your voice heard? Send us your thoughts about Marvel Studios stuff or this podcast. Email to thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or visit facebook.com/thewayphase4. And remember, it's more fun when you join in on the discussion.
So that's what this is.
What's new? Well, this episode titled One World, One People is said to be 52 minutes long. But from opening shot to credits, plus a mid-credit sequence, and yeah, there is one of those. There's 45 and a half minutes or so of showtime. The description in Disney Plus says, as the Flag Smashers escalate their efforts, Sam and Bucky take action. And where we left off, Bucky and Sam relieve John Walker of Captain America's shield. Then the government relieves Walker from the role, his title, and his retirement. We meet a new possible power broker in the Contessa. Zemo heads to the raft thanks to the Dora Milaje, and Sam finds out Isaiah isn't interested at all in the Stars and Stripes. He and Bucky fix a boat and sling the shield around a little for practice. Carly gets help in her quest from Sharon Carter, of all people. While the GRC committee is on red alert, Sam opens his gift from Bucky and the Wakandans, and John Walker goes off the deep end with a hammer and steel. The Disney Plus snap splash screen is followed by a Previously On segment that starts with an edited version of John Walker's appearance before the Senate committee. I don't know why, but I just don't like the way that they do their Previously Ons. And then we get the Marvel Studios title sequence to kick things off. Our first scene is of Carly giving a speech to the Flag Smashers, who we see are mostly in position to enact her plan. Immediately following that short montage is the show title card, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier one, with text in white over a black screen. News reports are telling us a little about the GRC Red Alert. That means there's been some time for reporters to gather good detailed information. Now, Bucky left Louisiana earlier in the day, and if he had good plane flights, he could reasonably get to downtown New York. But Sam? We saw it was nighttime at his house when he opened the package from Wakanda, and as we thought, it is indeed a new set of wings. So now he's got, you know, supersonic wings, I guess, because a jet can make the flight from New York to LA in about 2.5 hours, and Louisiana isn't half that far. So I guess, with the reports establishing it's been several hours since the lockdown in New York, Sam could probably make the flight, assuming he doesn't need to stop at all. But boy, he's going to have some friction on his face. He's got no full helmet, just some goggles. Anyway, we suspend our disbelief, and Bucky meets Sharon, who is wearing a mask like Natasha Romanoff did in Winter Soldier. And I'm wondering if this mask she's wearing to disguise herself is actually a tip-off that Sharon isn't Sharon. She shows a truly evil side during this episode, and even if it's in service of her own interests, I'm wondering if she's actually a Skrull or something else. You might say, why not just shapeshift then if she's a Skrull? But that would give her away to Bucky, so of course she wouldn't do that in front of him. Bucky also hasn't met any Skrull as far as we know, so he'd definitely not react well. Plus, I'm not sure if she could just change her face directly from the guy to Sharon Carter without revealing her alien self, and even that would take a lot of explaining. I think there's a possibility this isn't Sharon, but it probably is. Now, maybe this is the first part, though, of what will end up being the secret invasion or a Sharon from a different timeline or reality. Either way,
he's here. Do it now.
Carly sees Sam fly overhead. That's why they waited to start their plan, either for Batroc's benefit or because she knows that he's the real target now, that John Walker isn't Captain America anymore. Her insider henchmen don their masks, gas the officials in the lockdown tower, and that's when Sam makes his entrance. His new wings suit him very well, and he's very comfortable using the shield and his wings. It was awesome to see him crash the Flag Smasher party. There's a funny line by a security guard when Sam finally says, "I'm Captain America," where the guy says, "I thought he was on the moon." And Batroc makes his presence known, and Sam and him have a little fight. Bucky and Sharon are trying to keep the people in the building, but Carly has anticipated moves, and she's got people in place to do what she planned. They split up, and that's when a woman approaches Bucky with a phone with Carly on the other end. She makes her case to her superpowered nemesis, but while she was doing so, I couldn't help feel that even she knew that this was pointless trying to talk to him. And she says something ridiculous about, "Have you ever fought for something bigger than yourself?" I mean, she's talking to a guy who's, you know, fought in Endgame and fought in World War II. It wasn't just her giving Bucky a chance, though. It was all part of her plan to stall him to keep him from rescuing the officials en route to evacuation in the garage.
Seriously, Bucky, you had one job.
Sharon, meanwhile, uses a little bump implant to attach some kind of weapon to one of the Flag Smashers called Lennox. Sam questions her when she says there's one down, and she says she used mercury vapor, amongst other things, and yeah, even if it's corrosive, the vapor alone wouldn't act as fast as it did on the guy. But Matthias, Nico, and now Lennox are gone. That leaves 5 superpowered Flag Smashers left. Sam continues to fight Batroc while evacuations are taking place in the garage and in a helicopter on the roof. Then he escapes to fight, you know, Flag Smasher and helicopter pilot Diego. He's the one on the roof. Sam has his Red Wing tech, and he pursues the helicopter. His new drone, he sends it out, finds a passenger, Ayla Perez. She's got helicopter piloting experience, so Sam can remove Diego from the equation but still save the passengers. Meanwhile, Carly and 3 other Smashers have a conversation about whether to abandon or continue their fight. And like I mentioned last week, there's a moment here where Carly does her one world call and response, and the others aren't quick to one people her back. She seems sure that the movement will continue even if they die, but she seems much more committed to dying than the rest of them do to trying. In fact, she says, worst case scenario, kill the hostages. And that even surprises them because they, you know, they like the goal of stopping the vote, but they just, even they don't seem on board completely with her methods. On the other hand, Sam embodies Captain America very well, because at one point his mission switches from, you know, saving the people in that helicopter to saving 2 NYPD helicopter police from an out-of-control heli. And he gets to use his shield and wings to protect one of them on a bridge from the falling heli that he grabbed out of there, and the other one floats down thanks to a drone tether. Bucky is pursuing the Smashers with the armored vehicles and finds himself in the middle of a 4-on-1 fight. Carly decides things aren't going well and says, let's give him someone to save. So they set one of the armored cars on fire. It works. Bucky breaks off fighting to save innocent lives.
Morgenthau!
John Walker is back. He kept the Captain America gear and he's got his homemade shield with him. Carly says she's sorry for killing Lamar because she didn't want to hurt people that don't matter. But honestly, that's kind of like saying Robin doesn't matter to Batman. So it's not just insulting to Walker, it's kind of dumb. Hoskins may not have been her target, but she got Captain America to go crazy and go viral for it, and I'd say that helped her accomplish her goal. Walker begins fighting, but despite having the power from the serum, is overwhelmed, finds himself on his back looking at one of his medals inside his shield. Bucky finally frees the people in the burning truck and then goes to help Walker. The fight sequences are well done in this show, and it doesn't feel like anyone's more powerful than anyone else, but remember, Bucky's just better at fighting, and he has a vibranium arm. He gets knocked into a pit for a building that's under construction. He makes a cool hero landing, then he uses his arm to shield a blow from a Smasher leaping down to smash him with part of an iron girder.
A little birdie told me you know how to fly a helicopter.
Sam is still trying to save the evacuees in the heli, and has Red Wing text the woman who can pilot, and he tells her to put in her earbuds. Those must be some really good noise-canceling ones to block out the sounds of a heli. And for some reason, he's able to hear her through the earbuds count down perfectly. I mean, maybe he's got some tech there that, I mean, I guess that's what we're supposed to believe. Sam briefly gets knocked into the water, though, but that's really only to show us not only can his suit work in the air, but also the water, because he jets back out and into action. I got to believe that if he had the proper gear on his face, and that maybe he could even go into space with it. I'm just going to believe anything now that Wakandans can do any tech imaginable, even better than Tony Stark. He times out the attack that mirrors a little of the action from episode one, where he knocks someone out of the heli, and then Ayla gets into the pilot seat and rights the heli. Diego ends up in the Hudson River.
Nice work, Ayla!
Walker gets up from the ground, starts fighting the Smashers near the other armored car, and when he finds Carly, he's really single-minded. He wants to punish her, and for most of their fight, he seems to have an upper hand, but then she knocks him out. She decides to kill the rest of the hostages by driving the car into the pit with Bucky. She almost succeeds, but it comes to rest on some unfinished iron framework, but it looks like it's going to fall. Sharon arrives, but she's not superpowered, or at least we don't have reason to believe so, so she's just watching. Bucky can only watch as it hangs precariously above him. That's when John Walker steps back from the brink. Instead of pursuing Carly, he makes a choice. He looks at Carly, looks at the truck, and he chooses to save the people in the truck. But acting against the impulse almost seemed a little painful to him. He's twitching, he's shaking it off. He tries pulling back the car with his super strength, but the Smashers take advantage of his vulnerability and attack him, and he and a couple of them fall down, and it looks like the truck's going to be next. But then it stops, seemingly in midair. Now, Sam doesn't have super strength, but he has a jet-powered set of wings now, and he has help from a couple of his drones with Wakandan tech, and he saves the day.
That's the Black Falcon there, I tell you.
Now, that's Captain America.
The hostage is freed. Carly tries throwing something at Bucky, but we've already established he's got really great reflexes. He catches the pipe, but the Flag Smashers all seem to catch a shield with their faces. Sam hops down into the fight. Carly says, "You bought into the BS?" Sam turns it around on her, saying maybe she should try a new tactic. Batroc arrives, but we don't know it until the smoke canisters start hitting the ground around Bucky, John, and Sam and the Flag Smashers. Sam's new goggles can see through that gas. And at one point, John wanted them to join his team, but now it's more like John and Bucky are following a captain's lead. The Smashers split up, so the new team does too, with Bucky following John after one group, Sam heading off in another. It's Sharon, though, who comes across Carly first. She cut her off, having noticed Batroc firing down at the construction site, and he heads right down to where Carly seemed to be waiting for someone. Well, they both do, actually. They each have guns drawn on each other, Sharon and Carly, but Sharon drops her aim and starts chatting with Carly. Not only did they know each other in Madripoor, we find out how. Sharon seems to be the power broker. She says it's Carly who betrayed her. Why did Sharon work with Bucky and Sam then? It seems she got her power because she thinks ahead. Carly says her betrayal was because Sharon wanted to control a world that wronged her while Carly wanted to change it. Sharon actually offers her spot back as muscle for the power broker.
Without a super soldier, how much power does a power broker really have?
More than you.
That's when Batroc arrives. Carly realizes she was being spied on. Sharon says she's always prepared, except now Batroc knows she's the power broker and tries extorting her for 4 times their agreed upon amount. Sharon kills him, but gets shot by Carly. Sam hears the shots and comes running and confronts Carly, but rather than run in guns blazing like Walker might have, he tries talking her down. Carly wants Sam to fight her, but Sam decides not to fight back and just defend himself. Then I thought we were going to get an I can do this all day, but Sam is his own man.
Stay down!
No.
Dovich, Dee Dee, and Gigi follow an app to a rendezvous point, but it's Bucky and John waiting for them. Apparently, Bucky used the phone that Carly gave him earlier in the episode to talk, and he led them into a police trap. Walker gives a quote from Lincoln about mercy bearing greater fruit than strict justice, and from a little research, it appears Lincoln was referencing how Confederate soldiers were being captured, then paroled, because it was difficult to detain all of them. But before they could be considered exchanged for Union prisoners, they were being recaptured because they were again fighting for the South. Lincoln was apparently discussing the matter with Joseph Gillespie, who, along with Lincoln, helped found the Republican Party in Illinois. The matter was whether all prisoners should just be executed. But Lincoln didn't want the South to start doing the same to Union prisoners. and he wondered how the decision would be made if it was just some prisoners on occasion. I'm wondering if we're supposed to know this kind of thing, and are we supposed to draw a parallel to whether the Flag Smashers should just be killed like Zemo wanted, or should they be spared? If it meant like Zemo, they could end up being broken out of prison and end up fighting again. So maybe this is a really cool little addition from history, or maybe it was just a really good Lincoln quote. Carly and Sam are still fighting, and it's obvious that even with the suit, the Super Soldier Serum gives her an edge over him. She knocks him down, and though he gets back up, she's got her gun again. She's going to use it. But Sharon shoots her several times. Carly is holding the medallion that Mama Donya had with the hand in the globe, the Hamsa symbol, the inspiration for One World, One People flag smasher thing. She dies in Sam's arms. Sam carries her out, but someone made the choice to approve making the murderer a martyr. The music cues, Sam's speech, his entrance with her. While admirable and maybe even in character, it just leaves me shaking my head. It really feels like Carly won here, and that hers was a sacrifice. She was just about to kill Sam, remember. Sharon saved him, even if she was also trying to eliminate evidence, she saved him. What could have been a really touching speech by Sam to the GRC officials ends up tarnished in my eyes. There's a moment where reporters come up to him asking if the government made him Captain America or if it's a Falcon or Captain Falcon, and then A-List thanks Sam and the senator says they'll do their part now. They say they're going to move ahead with resetting the borders and that the terrorists only set them back a bit. Sam says don't call them terrorists and that the peacekeepers will be called terrorists by the resettled. Terrorists, refugee, thug are labels, he says, to get around the question of why. Unfortunately, that's just not correct. In our world that we live in, liberals don't want to call people, say, illegal immigrants. It's not to get around why. The why is because it's not safe for everyone and anyone to be allowed to sneak in the country. You're allowed to disagree with me. But calling them terrorists, the Flag Smasher, isn't a distraction to the real issue. In fact, Sam's wrong. Calling the Flag Smashers terrorists sets them apart from the people who don't murder innocents but disagree with how the GRC is doing things. The GRC may be doing things wrong, but the answer is not kill people because you think they're wrong. Sam gets called on it by the senator. He wants things both ways, and while he admits he doesn't have the answer, so he's not really useful in this discussion, he suggests the GRC doesn't either, except is there anyone qualified to be on both sides of this discussion? Does Sam really think that no one at any point, had discussions about what to do and nobody in the GRC ever considered anybody else's opinion? Maybe that is the case. There was a brief scene at the end of last episode where we're hinted that that might be the case. I guess for the sake of the show, we're supposed to believe that every single person in power and in the GRC is corrupt. Where Sam gets things right, though, is he says there's finally a common struggle. And this is kind of where they should have just picked up the speech. Also, I agree. The GRC is moving too fast. You know, it's only been a few months since people have been snapped back. But it's only been a few months, and people are starting to probably have disagreements about, hey, I used to live in this house. So while I agree with Sam's point, I just think the entire first part of his speech was counterproductive. He starts hitting home when he points out that being powerless and helpless, vulnerable, is when better decisions are made. That's right. The whole world just went through a situation where half the planet was erased. The senator says he just doesn't understand.
I'm a black man carrying the stars and stripes. What don't I understand?
The parallel drawn, though, isn't appropriate. Half the people in the world don't care who Captain America is. And most definitely not half the people in the country. And not even half the white people in the country that don't want him to be Captain America. Not even close. And though he started to make the comparison, he dials it back a little bit, saying millions. And then he says he even feels that uncomfortableness in their presence, in the presence of the people around him. Unless he knows he's speaking through the television news cameras to America right now, he's calling the people around him, the GRC committee, bigots. There's a big part of me that wants to like Captain America's coming out message, right, to the world. I like the thought of Sam Wilson being Captain America. I think he's the best person for the job. I think Steve Rogers and Bucky had a discussion, and I think they chose the right guy. It has nothing to do with the color of his skin. I like Sam Wilson being the first black Captain America. I like that he was rejecting Isaiah Bradley's version of the country and choosing optimism. It appears that he's compromising, and maybe that's the point for those people who, like me, aren't making a choice based on the color of his skin. We see that Isaiah and Elijah are watching in their home in Baltimore, and that's over a line about how he has no super soldier serum or blonde hair or blue eyes.
The only power I have is that I believe we can do better.
For him, it boils down to who is in the room making the decisions, and that I can get behind. Did the GRC officials get elected, or were the appointments by people still in power, of people who would use that power to keep and enlarge their own power? That definitely seems like the road the show writers should have taken us down, but they never did that. If you watch the show, we don't see that big, massive government corruption. We see hints of it, but we don't see or hear the obvious, straightforward evidence. All we see was Carly whining that her people weren't getting more supplies, but we never saw the people suffering because of it. We saw people sick, but that's not because they were starving. We further didn't see if there was a reason that her camp specifically was being left out, or if it was all of the camps. This is a failure of writing and editing, and I know there may have been entire plot points removed because of the pandemic, but that seems like a poor excuse to me. Sam's speech continues with lauding Carly for being willing to die for her cause, and says no one has stopped to ask why. I'm pretty sure they did. But I'm pretty sure they didn't feel like someone who took super soldier serum, then murdered people, was the right one to listen to. Sam's right that they don't want to see what happens when the next Carly comes along, and there are a lot of people who are upset. I just wonder who this speech is for. Is it for Democrats watching this to tell them to listen to more Republicans who are upset with what's happening in government? Is it for Republicans who had power and had to listen to Democrats calling them racists and accusing them of all sorts of horrors, but they should still listen to what they're saying, just not how they're saying it? Is it for white people to consider what people of color are going through, or people of color to show patience to every other group different from themselves? Usually, ambiguity is a strength because then everyone can find something to grab hold of, but here, it just comes off preachy. If you just watch the show for lighthearted fun, you probably don't feel any more than a slight discomfort and let it pass. If you find yourself cheering for Sam here more than for saving the people, then you're clearly the kind of person the writers and decision makers at Disney were trying to inspire. Sam likens the power of GRC to Thanos, but then he elevates Carly again, not just mentioning her in the same sentence, but equating the two. I'm very much interested in the story of Sam as Captain America, and I think him speaking out for causes is just fine. It's not even that it's this cause that's bothering me. I just want it to make sense. And if you analyze it with what we're shown in the TV show, there's a lot left out or cut out that could have helped make his anger here reasonable. I have the feeling that this argument he's making is not really about the Flag Smashers at all, and that we're supposed to read into it. He leads them to question how to use their power, which is reasonable, but also the entire point of representative government. He nods to John Walker, and Bucky lightens the mood, thankfully.
Sorry, I was texting, and so all I heard was the black guy in Stars and Stripes.
Sam and Sharon and Bucky meet up for a little denouement, but Sharon is still, on the run. She doesn't go to a hospital. Instead, Bucky helps her leave the scene, and the new Captain America gets asked for help tracking down Diego. The others, meaning the three that were with Carly most of the time, Dovish, Didi, and Gigi, get loaded into a transport where we hear they'll be taken to the raft. Now, as the door closes, a guy tells them one world, one people. So we're meant to think, somehow they're going to miss that transport to the prison, right? But as it drives off, their truck explodes. It's Esnik, Zemo's butler, the old guy from the plane. He's sitting in a car nearby with a detonator, tucks it into his jacket. There are only three people in the truck, okay? Only three of them there. Go back and look if you wish. Now, maybe the desire was to insinuate that Diego had been captured and put in there, or died in the Hudson, but we saw the door close with three people, and that makes me wonder about the next scene. We see an establishing shot of the raft prison, and Zemo is in his cell with a small two-band radio that has news from the outside world, which I really wonder if they would allow him that. It says four members of the Flag Smashers were killed. in that explosion. So either the news was told Diego was killed erroneously on purpose, or there was an editing goof. Maybe he was supposed to be in that truck, or there was, you know, they couldn't explain it away. Was the radio broadcast, though, for Zemo's benefit? Was it for ours? To simplify the fact that Carly, Matthias, Nico, Lennox, and now Dovich, Gigi, Didi, and Diego are off the table. That's eight people, right? The eight vials that were missing. And now John Walker is one of the last people with super serum. Will Diego end up supplying someone with the means to get more super soldier serum? Or is John Walker easy enough because they don't think that Bucky's going to have anything to do with it? Anyway, Zemo appears satisfied with the news, and so does Val.
Don't call me that.
She's in the room Walker got stripped of command in. She's waiting on him to come out in his new uniform. She says, Zemo got the last laugh, but then insinuates maybe it was really her that planned it, which is more likely than Zemo orchestrating it from prison, right?
Couldn't have worked better if I'd planned it myself. Oh, well, maybe I did. No, I'm kidding, I didn't. Or did I?
She's talking to John's wife as they wait. When John Walker comes out, he doesn't look too much different from before. He's got the same uniform on, except, now this is very interesting, the main color is black instead of blue. So when he says it's black, you know, and it's the same uniform except it's black. That's like a little nod to Captain America. You know, it's the same as before, except now Anthony Mackie is black. You know, Captain America, Sam Wilson, is black. The Contessa says things are about to get weird, and when they do, they won't need a Captain America. They'll need a U.S. agent. And that's his new sobriquet.
Back, 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 back!
We then see Bucky heading to Yuri's house. He's following through on the promise he made to Sam where he's going to give real closure to people. I like that we don't see Yuri forgiving him and later don't see them close because it's a little more realistic that it would take some time and it wouldn't sit well immediately with Yuri. Bucky leaves Dr. Rayner a gift. It's the book Steve Rogers and he used, but that doesn't sit well with me. I mean, this is a sentimental item that he's giving to the doctor. I guess maybe it shows that he's moved on, but does she know about the book specifically? I guess it's easier for us to see with the crossed off names that he's completed the form of therapy. And if he leaves it in a note, but she gets to keep Steve Rogers' book? Bucky doesn't go in to talk with Yuri and Leah when they're inside the cafe that he was talking to Yuri in at the beginning of the episode one. And then we head to Baltimore.
What you want, Black Falcon?
Sam shows up at Isaiah's house. Elijah is disrespectful, but at least Sam calls him on it here. And Isaiah is still better. But last episode, he said no self-respecting black man would ever wear the stars and stripes. Now?
A black Captain America, huh?
Sam knows the fight he has ahead, and that optimism seems to be working on Isaiah, even if just barely. Sam takes him and Elijah to Washington to see the Captain America exhibit, and it's got a new addition. A special section dedicated to the black super soldiers with a statue of Isaiah part of the exhibit. Isaiah's story is finally told, and what I could read of the story on the obelisk near the statue basically tells us what we already know, and I didn't see anything new. We then get some upbeat music and see Sam and Bucky down in Louisiana, now good friends, and it's a nice musical montage to close out the show, but I'm not sure if that means that Bucky's going to live there or if it's a stop before he heads to Wakanda and we don't get to see the boat in action. I mean, this whole show, you know, they've been trying to work on the boat. We don't get to see it, you know, sailing off. That would have been nice. It's just a nice big party where, of course, Sam is the center of attention. And then the credits start. Instead of the slate reading The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, a really exciting moment. It now reads Captain America and the Winter Soldier. Sam Wilson, you have arrived.
Damn right.
That's not all. We see Sam lived up to his word to Sharon. Now as Captain America, he's calling in some favors, or at least strongly suggesting that Sharon Carter is restored and pardoned, kind of like Walker did to Bucky getting him out of therapy earlier in the season. It's on her way out of the committee room, though, where we get perhaps the biggest bombshell. It's not that she was the power broker. It's that now that she's pardoned, she's still the power broker. And her call to associates indicates she's going to sell out the U.S., to me, she's either turned into a really easy-to-kill villain, or perhaps she's not really Sharon, as I suggested earlier, and instead something like a Skrull. Endgame suggested she was snapped or unaccounted for, so if she was, maybe this is an indication that the people snapped back were really just versions of people taken from different realities that got snapped away by Thanos that existed in that reality, and then that reality never got them back where the Avengers failed. So the people that he snapped away are gone forever. But when, you know, Bruce Banner snapped them back, maybe they were taken from another universe where they had been snapped by Thanos and then put into this universe. Maybe that's true of everyone that was snapped away. Maybe everyone's slightly different. Sure seemed like she grabbed a bunch of power quickly, if that's the case. Now, if that's true, since she'd only have been in Madripoor for a short time between Civil War and the snap, and then back from the snap to now in the timeline, it's also possible she was just assumed snap and was actually working in Madripoor to set things up, you know, the whole time. It's possible she's always been bad, working as a double or triple agent. And though she says she's related to Peggy Carter, we never got confirmation of that from Peggy, right? Maybe she was always working both sides when there was Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. and always chooses the side that gives her the most power. Clearly she's working with someone. Maybe Kang the Conqueror, if that's the route that Marvel's going to take. Or the Mandarin, or some villain we've yet to see. Because she wouldn't just call someone to tell them that if it wasn't super important. She would wait till she got there. It may even be the real power broker that she's a level below this person, protecting the real one. Heck, maybe she's actually someone from the past or future that traveled in time for Kang to do exactly what she's doing. It's clear that her story's not done, but whether she's movie villain quality remains to be seen. I hope there's more to it, and this is one of those things I do want an explanation for, and isn't just one of those world-building threads that can stay undeveloped.
Welcome home, Agent Carter.
Say it ain't so, Sharon. Well, there is talk that the show is being submitted by Disney for awards for drama instead of something like a miniseries, which gives some people the impression that maybe this is indeed just the first season of a multi-season show. I would welcome that, for sure. But after the show aired, a new movie was added to the Marvel slate, untitled, but basically Captain America 4. That seems to be the next clear appearance for Sam and Bucky, and I've been worrying about that. But Hollywood Reporter seems to indicate the script hasn't been written yet, though they say it will be done by showrunner Malcolm Spellman and Episode 5 writer Dallin Muson. We don't know where it's going to be placed in the cinematic order or who the enemy will be, or even if there's a title, because remember, Captain America has been followed by First Avenger, Winter Soldier, and Civil War. There's no clear tie-in here from, you know, the Marvel Studios multiverse to the TV shows, although any character can basically show up at any time. Next up is Loki, and though I doubt we'll see or even hear mention of Sam or Bucky, or Wanda or Vision for that matter, there may be a through theme instead of characters, since that show is going to involve the Time Variance Authority. All the movies and shows coming out might just be setting us up for the introduction of the mutants, or with the multiverse, some other threats like King the Conqueror, the Fantastic Four, something. There's a show on the horizon called Secret Invasion, and though it was Skrulls doing the invading in the comics, Disney and Marvel can do anything with the comics they want. I think what's worked so far for me is that they're picking a lane and sticking to it. The worst thing they could do for me as a fan would be to start retconning things, because while there's a multiverse, there's only one I really care about, and it's the one where this story plays out that we've been watching since Iron Man or the Hulk movie, if you really want to count that, or timeline-wise, it began with the First Avenger. I like where WandaVision left us, and I liked The Falcon and the Winter Soldier too. It wasn't perfect, but it was 6 pretty enjoyable and compact episodes. I wonder if we'll ever get to see a version where they add back in the deleted stuff that they took out, you know, if that's the reports at least. But if that other storyline ends up altering the end of this story, then I say leave it be. I like my Captain America lawful good and my enemies chaotic evil, I guess. Well, what do you think? What are your thoughts? email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact with us on Twitter at thewayphase4 or at facebook.com/thewayphase4. Episode 6, like the others, was directed by Kerry Skoglund. Showrunner Malcolm Spellman and writer Joseph Sawyer wrote this episode. Next up for us here at This Is The Way Phase 4 is a brief hiatus. We're going to enjoy a week or two where we don't have to rush to make notes, time to edit. But if we hear news that there will be another season, we'll be sure to pass that along in our next episode. After a short break, we'll be back at it. There'll probably be a preview of Loki, which is set to start airing in June. And the next Marvel Studios movie will be Black Widow, and that comes out in July. And if some really big news comes out, we'll probably cover that as well. I'm not sure if Loki is going to be a mystery type show or action. I've seen the trailers, but how's it supposed to fit in with the multiverse? It's got time travel, so we're sure to be left a little confused at times. It will be interesting to hear how Marvel considers time to actually work, but also Tom Hiddleston is a really fun Loki. Since he dies in Endgame, I'm interested to see if this is the last hurrah, or if he somehow sneaks into future shows and movies being a variant. We'll just have to see, but I'm really excited for it, and I've enjoyed both shows that Marvel has released on Disney Plus so far. This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 6 of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.